He stepped forward 2 paces and stood still, turned his head slowly left and right, and scoped out a 200-degree arc all around him, like a huge, curved bubble of space from which he had to be aware of every sound. Assuming that Pauling was doing the same thing north of the house, they had every angle of approach covered between them. At first, he heard nothing, just an absolute absence of sound, like a vacuum, like he was deaf. Then, as he relaxed and concentrated, he started to pick up tiny, imperceptible sounds drifting in across the flat land, the thrill of faint breezes in distant trees, the hum of power lines a mile away, the soak of water turning earth to mud in ditches, grains of dirt drying and falling into furrows, field mice in burrows, things growing. He turned his head left and right like radar, and knew that any human approach might as well be accompanied by a marching band. He would hear it clearly, 100 yards away, however quiet anyone tried to be. Reacher, alone in the dark, armed and dangerous, invincible. He stood in the same spot for 5 straight hours. It was cold, but bearable. Nobody came. By 6:30 in the morning, the sun was showing far away to his left. There was a bright horizontal band of pink in the sky, a thick horizontal blanket of mist on the ground. Gray visibility was spreading westward slowly like an ebb tide, the dawn of a new day, the time of maximum danger. Taylor and Jackson came out of the house carrying the 3rd and 4th rifles. Reacher didn't speak, just took up a new station against the rear facade of the house, his shoulder against the corner facing south. Taylor mirrored his position against the front wall. Reacher knew without looking that 60 feet behind them, Jackson and Pauling were doing the same thing. 4 weapons, 4 pairs of eyes, all trained outward. Reasonable security. For as long as they could bear to stay in position. Chapter 70. They stayed in position all day long. All through the morning and all through the afternoon and well into the evening. 14 straight hours. Lane didn't come. 1 at a time, they took short meal breaks and shorter bathroom breaks. They rotated stations clockwise around the house for variety. Their 8-pound rifles started to feel like 8 tons in their hands. Jackson slipped away for a minute and turned the bird scarer back on. Thereafter, the stillness was periodically shattered by loud, random shotgun blasts. Even though they knew for sure they were due, each sentry jumped and ducked each time they arrived. Lane didn't come. Kate and Jade stayed in the house out of sight. They made food and poured drinks and carried them on trays to the windows and the doors. Tea for Taylor and Jackson, coffee for Reacher, orange juice for Pauling. The sun burned through the mist and the day grew warm, and then it grew cold again in the late afternoon. Lane didn't come. Jade drew pictures. Every 20 minutes or so, she would bring a new one to a different window and ask for an opinion concerning its merit. When it was his turn to judge, Reacher would duck his head down and give the paper a look. Then he would turn back to the outward view and talk out of the side of his mouth. "Very good," he would say. And generally, the pictures merited the praise. The kid wasn't a bad little artist. She had switched from future predictions to straightforward reportage. She drew the red Mini Cooper. She drew Pauling with her gun. She drew Taylor with a mouth like a wrecked Buick's grill. She drew Reacher, huge, taller than the house. Then late in the day, she switched from reportage to fantasy and drew farm animals in the barns, even though she had been told that the Jacksons didn't have any, not even a dog. Lane didn't come. Kate fixed sandwiches for an early dinner, and Jade took to visiting the corner windows and asking everyone in turn if she could come outside and explore. Everyone in turn said no, she had to hide. On the 3rd go-round, Reacher heard her modify her request and ask Taylor if she could come out after dark, and he heard Taylor say, "Maybe," like worn-down parents everywhere. Lane didn't come. By 8:30 in the evening, visibility had died away to nothing again, and Reacher had been on his feet for 19 hours. Pauling, too. Taylor and Jackson had done 24, spelled only by a 5-hour break. They all met in a loose huddle in the gathering gloom by the front door, shaky with fatigue, frustrated, made anxious by fruitless vigilance. Taylor said,
"He's waiting us out." "Therefore he's going to win," Jackson said. "We can't keep this up much longer."
"He's had 27 hours, Pauling said. "We have to assume he's armed by now."
"He'll come tomorrow at dawn," Taylor said.
"You sure?" Reacher asked.
"No, really.
Me either. 3 or 4 in the morning would work just as well.
Too dark.
If they've bought guns, they could have bought night vision, too."
"How would you do it?"
3 guys loop around and walk in from the north. The other 4 come up the driveway. Maybe 2 in a car. Lights off, high speed, with the other 2 flanking it on foot. 2 directions, 7 guys. Their choice of 7 windows. We couldn't stop at least 3 of them getting inside. They'd get you or a hostage before we could react.
"You're a real ray of sunshine," Taylor said.
"I'm just trying to think like them. We'd get them before they got anywhere near the house. Only if all 4 of us can stay awake and alert for the next 8 hours, or the next 32 hours, if he delays another day, or the next 56 hours, if he delays 2 days, which he might. He's in no hurry, and he's not dumb. If he's decided to wait us out, why not do it properly?"
"We're not moving. This place is a stronghold."
3-dimensionally, it's fine. But battles are fought in 4 dimensions, not 3. Length, breadth, and height, plus time. And time is on Lane's side, not ours. This is a siege now. We're going to run out of food, and sooner or later, all 4 of us are going to be asleep at the same time. So we'll have the guard. 1 man north, 1 man south, the other 2 resting but ready. Reacher shook his head. "No. It's time to get aggressive."
"How?"
"I'm going to go find them. They've got to be holed up somewhere close. It's time to pay them a visit. They won't be expecting that."
"Alone?" Pauling said. "That's insane."
"I have to anyway. I didn't get Hobart's money yet. There's 800 grand out there. Can't let it go to waste." Taylor and Pauling stayed on guard, and Reacher fetched the big ordnance survey map from the Minnie's glove box. He took Jade's latest drawings off the kitchen table and piled them on a chair and spread out the map in their place. Then he went over it with Jackson. Jackson had a year's worth of local knowledge, which was less than Reacher would have liked, but it was better than nothing. The map clarified most of the terrain issues all by itself with its faint orange contour lines, which were very widely spaced and which curved only gently. Flat land. Probably the flattest in the British Isles, like a pool table. Grange Farm and Bishop's Pargeter were roughly in the center of a wide triangle of empty space, bounded to the east by the road that ran south from Norwich to Ipswich in Suffolk, and to the west by the Tetford Road that Reacher and Pauling had driven 3 times already. Elsewhere in the triangle were meandering minor tracts and isolated farm settlements. Here and there, chance and history had nestled small communities in the angles of crossroads. They were shown on the map as tiny gray squares and rectangles. Some of the rectangles represented short rows of houses. Some of the larger buildings were shown individually. The only one within any kind of a reasonable distance from Bishop's Pargeter and labeled PH was the Bishop's Arms. "This is the only pub for miles, lad," the farmer at the bar had said. "Why else do you think it's so crowded?"